Test, test, 1, 2, 3.
Check, check.
Hello? It's going.
It's going.
Wow.
Wow.
And we're back. Welcome to Continuing Conversations.
Hello.
I'm Pastor Matt.
I'm Pastor Dana.
And welcome. We are talking this morning about Luke chapter 12, 13 through 21.
Yeah. We don't have any special guests this week, but it was fun to have my dad on last week.
It was. Yeah. It was great. Yeah.
He loved that. That Yay. Was something.
Yay,
yeah.
Scott.
He would love to do something in that realm. If he was younger, I think he would have been a content creator somehow.
Yeah.
He would have had his own podcast. Like,
would he have done like legal advice podcast?
Maybe.
You think he still would have been a lawyer, or would he just gone straight like
I don't know.
Influencer?
He didn't talk about this, but that was kind of his, it wasn't a second career, but he went to law school like late 20s, early 30.
So
he graduated early 30. So
not
like
second career, but kind of a late.
Yeah.
He wasn't. Okay.
Which a lot of people do at law school. That is not unheard of.
In the seminary, like church world, we're called pipeliners. Those of us that went.
I was not, but you were.
Straight from, undergrad to seminary and then into their first call. But you're not a pipeliner, huh?
I'm not a pipeliner, but I did work in church. So, it's not like I was in the corporate world and then came and was like, oh, now I'm going to go to seminary. So, I was a little familiar. It makes you feel like a complete outsider.
Oh,
I think.
For sure.
I feel like I know nothing about, I mean, I've learned a lot, of course, but I knew nothing about synods and bishops.
Right.
And then, you know, we talked this morning about the ELCA churchwide assembly. Like, I don't know any of that hierarchy thing. I don't have pastors in my family. Like,
yeah. I'm with you on that.
New.
I'm the only pastor in my family.
Yep. Yep.
And
we
also,
don't talk about this enough that like it makes you feel like an outsider.
It does, especially if you come from your home church is kind of a bigger church.
My home church is a bigger church that's not very connected with
and
the synod.
I
things.
Would say the same
like,
thing about my home church is like they're a church in good standing,
their,
of course, and they do their
kind of their
part
thing,
in the seminary and in the synodical world and everything. But they kind of just. They stay in the. If you're a big enough church, you kind of don't need to rely on synod stuff as much.
Yep.
You can just sort of exist in your own bubble, which is funny because if you do go to these synod events, there's very little representation from
the big churches.
The big churches, because
it's
like, why do they want to come to these things? They got their own stuff going on.
Which I would argue is why they need to be there and
Me
to
too,
come.
Yeah,
but
I would say so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We are a very contemporary church, so the hymnal, I hadn't held one of those until I went to seminary.
Yeah,
you know,
like
I was
what's
like,
this
what
book?
Is, th-? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very new to me. All of the like the settings in the ELW are not familiar to me.
Yeah,
now they are
because
like my internship church was really good about that and good about educating me too.
Right.
and not putting me down for it. You
right.
Know?
Because when
this,
you went
dummy.
To California.
Went to California.
And that. Because it's California and not the Midwest where Lutheranism is huge.
Right.
Yeah, it was a smaller church.
I think
church.
That helped a little bit to kind of be an outsider in an outsider
same.
Place.
Yeah, like, I felt the same when I got called
to
Texas. It was the same thing. We were not the big kids on the block. So
right.
we did
right.
have to stick together with our Lutheran brothers and sisters out there because it's like we're kind of on an island. Whereas here in Minnesota, every church on the big, the big church on the corner is going to be a Lutheran church.
Yes.
That's not so in Texas. They're all Baptist. So it was like, I did learn a lot about synodical stuff and how the governance of the church works and how the business side of the church works. Cause that's churchwide assembly, which happened this week is like so much church business going on.
Right.
And I didn't know any of that. So church-wide, all that stuff
Which
was new to me as
well.
Which
is also why I kind of love it, where I'm like, this is the insider trading that we get to kind of be a part of now.
It's inside baseball, kind of. And if you're not clued into it or you're not a lay leader in it or whatever, because there are, so the church-wide assembly happened this week, earlier this week, and
The
CWA, church-wide assembly. But it's not just a bunch of pastors and bishops sitting in a room doing the work
of
the
people.
Church. It has to be
It has to be,
a bunch of lay people. Like,
they
there's a certain percentage.
They need it. Well, and I heard there was something about youth leadership.
Yep, there
too.
Needs to be youth representation.
I saw a post about that, though, to go up from 10% to 20%.
Something like that. Representation. Yeah, I saw that, too.
We can
I'm
talk about
sure
that
exactly.
in a second because I have thoughts. But yeah. Yeah.
But, like, they are doing the best they can to make these processes. Like, for example, at Churchwide Assembly this year, it was a bishop election year. So, you know, this is not... the conclave where, you know, they shut the door and it's a very it's shrouded in mystery and there's all this jockeying and who knows what happens behind closed doors. This is very much like an open process where ordained clergy and bishops and lay people alike, youth, elders of the congregations, they all sit in this room and they do this work together.
Yes.
Because it should be from the people and of the people and all that.
This happens on a smaller level as the Synod Assembly happened in May that I went to. So like one that I got to participate in. Yep. So
Each synod has their own assemblies, the church-wide, which runs through Chicago.
Yep.
They have their own assemblies. It was in Arizona this year.
Did you
very
see the
exciting.
Next one in 3 years? Exciting place.
Iowa,
Des Moines.
Right? Des Moines. Yay,
like,
Des Moines,
my
Iowa.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. You know, we're not the bougiest.
No, not really.
Things, right?
But it's
we're
good.
Not,
if we get some.
We're not
I mean,
doing corporate retreats like to the Bahamas, okay?
The reputation of these assemblies is like they always happen in the summer, the hottest month. Like it's always like July. In Arizona or Texas, it's always like, why is it the hottest place in the world in the hottest month?
Because
so I'm glad
it's cheap.
It's cheaper, but I'm glad it's in Des Moines because it's like good. We can be somewhere hopefully a little bit more cool, but not if they got the corn sweats going on.
Oh,
if this is in the middle of corn sweats,
I don't even want to talk.
I'm
not going.
But
I want to go. But
the big news.
I love this stuff.
Yeah, me too. The big news from Churchwide Assembly is we do have a new bishop. Yahiel Curry.
Yeah.
And we mentioned him in our prayers this morning in church. Pray for him and the transition that now will be happening with Bishop Elizabeth Eaton on her way out. She served the length of her term, and now she's stepping down, and we got a new bishop stepping in, but also new secretary, it's a whole new leadership team.
So a bishop is not, how do we explain a bishop? Like, it's not the president of the ELCA.
They're not the pope.
It's not a pope. It's not a, like, director of things. Things don't go through them to do. It's
the way the polity.
But it is a leadership position.
The way the polity of the Lutheran Church works is the congregation is in charge of the congregation.
Yes.
You know, even Pastor Dana and I, we're called here by the people.
Yeah.
And it's by the people. In our church council that we meet every month, we don't even have a vote. We have a voice, but no vote.
Yes.
So we have our own influence, of course, and we do our due diligence to have lots of little conversations before the meeting so that, you know, what happens in the meeting is something that we're all aware of. We don't just fly in blind and go, oh, what decisions is the council making? You know, we wouldn't be doing our jobs. But we don't have that sort of power, and the pastor doesn't have that sort of power. The bishop could show
up. Or shouldn't,
exactly. The bishop could show up. Bishop Jen, who was on this podcast a couple of months ago, go listen to that if you haven't already.
Yeah.
She could show up on Sunday or to an annual meeting or to one of our council meetings. She would have no power, because she is not elected to our church council. So same thing with church.
No power, but yes, leadership.
Yes,
like,
leadership.
There
yes,
are a lot
voice,
of churches.
Yes, authority.
Well, and there are a lot of churches
powered.
That function so solely on, trusting their leadership and their pastors, and the church council decides to give them some
seeds that power to them, and it works well, it's great.
Yeah,
but it's it often. Goes south, but and the same is true with our churchwide. So this is our new presiding bishop. So the presiding bishop is kind of the bishop to the bishops. It's kind of like a pastor to all the pastors, in that they help set the tone for what the messaging is from the synod when there's a natural disaster or something. They are sort of the mouthpiece to us.
Yep.
But it's not like the bishop's job is to make rules that we all need to follow, and
they can't. That's not how it works.
So,
you can't write an executive order to say,
honestly,
you know, stop
a lot
doing
of,
this.
No, yeah. A lot of the job of the presiding bishop is
damage control,
and it's a lot of like corporate sort of stuff. It's a lot of like businessy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you're handling legal things, and it's just, I don't know if that's.
But it's
anything
a lot of
I would feel
morale
called to do.
And mm-hmm. yeah, being yep. the face of it,
being the face
and
the mouthpiece
like,
for it,
being an influence mm-hmm. in, yeah. Well, I mean, we know what kind of influence influencers have. Like
yep.
that is
yep.
that's the
kind
job.
Of,
yeah,
yeah. We look for leadership in that way, and it's more leadership
yeah.
and a voice, but not as much like authority and power
right.
comes through
right.
that office. It's more the authority of. What that elected position means.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah.
So, Curry, I heard, well, and I've seen some of his stuff, and people are excited that he has kind of a background in, like, mission development,
mm-hmm.
in poverty ministries,
yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Things like that. So, I think people are excited that this is a new, kind of a new era of, like, what does
yeah.
the church do now as
we
are,
need...
as the church is dying?
Yeah,
like, what,
exactly.
We need a little life somewhere.
We need that sort of leadership of
yeah.
what we're going
yeah.
to be into the future. So, that tone setting
yeah.
from the office of the presiding bishop is going to be very impactful going
yep.
forward of who we are as the church, how we operate
yep.
in the world, what we say about certain issues,
yeah.
how we act around certain issues. Bishop Yahiel Curry is from the Chicagoland Synod. So
mm-hmm.
He was the bishop of the Chicagoland Synod. So I don't know. Now I guess the Chicago Synod has their own election because they need a bishop
oh, yeah.
there. I don't know how that works.
I suppose
if like a governor is chosen as the president... elected, it's like, well, now that state needs to have
either,
a special
either
election,
they do
right?
a special election or I guess he would special elect someone, like
I don't know,
put
yeah, I'm
someone
not sure.
in that position, whatever, that's
it's
not our business.
Not, business, not my business,
not
my circus, not my monkeys. I don't know how any of that works. Chicago, best of luck, figure that out.
You
I
can
suppose.
Do it, Chicago.
There's definitely like proper order for
oh,
how
yeah.
this is not the first time, often. The bishop is chosen from bishops.
Yeah.
You know, the presiding bishop is already a bishop somewhere. And a lot of the reason why they are chosen in that way is because they're kind of already doing this more corporate side of the church thing
yeah.
anyway, and shown a call to do that and aptitude to do that. So it's
yeah.
like, well, let's just serve them a bigger sort of stage
stone.
To do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But at that churchwide assembly, it's an ecclesiastical vote. So
right.
any ordained
could be us.
It
could have been you or me.
Yeah,
yeah.
Neither one of us was there in Arizona this week, but we could have gotten a call, been like,
yeah.
"Hey, your name is getting some steam around here."
I told my friends to put my name in, and I don't know.
And did they?
I didn't see it on the ballot. So
there were plenty of people that got like two or three votes.
Yeah.
And I didn't see Reverend Dana Becker.
I know I didn't. I didn't campaign well.
On there.
You probably have to be you. Probably can't be in your first year of ordained ministry.
I think anybody can.
Really? You just have to be ordained.
I think you just have to be ordained and breathing.
Well, I am doing both of
You're
those.
You're doing both of those
so
things. So
why
hey,
didn't they elect me?
Maybe
Rude.
In 6 years you'll come up. I think
Oof.
It's a 6-year term, I believe.
I think it is.
It's six. And then I don't know how many terms you can serve, but.
Well, didn't
Bishop Elizabeth
Eaton
has been around for a
two?
Long time.
Didn't
yeah, so 12
two?
Years.
Yeah.
That's why, I mean, it feels like she's been the bishop forever. But then
well,
again,
okay,
12 years is a long
years,
time.
It's 25, so 6 years would be 31.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd also get to go to the Lutheran World Federation Assembly.
I suppose
in
so,
30,
yeah. Wow.
2030.
Yeah.
Which wow. I got to figure out how to get to again, because that was awesome. So that's the worldwide
assembly. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, so the other,
assembly.
Because we
yeah.
are not the ELCA, the Evangelical Church. Lutheran Church in America is not the only Lutheran church
we're not
in the
world,
biggest. Obviously. And we're not even the biggest.
Ethiopia.
We're just an church body. So there's the larger gathering. There's, yeah, Ethiopia and Liberia and
Tanzania
is big.
Big.
Yeah. So they all get
big.
Together.
Yeah. Well,
we
no, it's the, it's the whole world, not just Africa.
Yeah.
It's
no,
Germany
sorry,
and yeah.
But those are the biggest.
And yes,
those ones we just
yes.
named.
The,
isn't that
the
funny?
African
you would
churches
think,
are the biggest.
You would think, well, where's the biggest Lutheran church? body in the world, you would think it'd be like, oh, in Sweden or Norway, because that's what you think of.
Yeah.
In America, in North America. You'd think Germany, because that's where Luther's from, or you'd think somewhere in Scandinavia, because that's where in Minnesota, a lot of a lot of us like Augustana Lutherans are like Swedish.
Lutheran
yeah. churches in the world are in Africa, Ethiopia, Liberia, Kenya, like they're all, which is sort of our Western, I don't know what you'd call blinders.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
we just think everything revolves around us in the Western world. It's like all, there's
so they do that conference. They do that assembly every 7 years.
Yeah.
The Lutheran World Federation. So. And I got to go in 23.
That's very cool.
In Poland. Where were we? Krakow.
Krakow. I've never
Krakow,
been.
Krakow, Poland. Yeah.
I've never been. I don't know where the next one is, but maybe I can go
to that
one. I
think the next one's in Germany.
That would be cool.
I mean, it was like we went through seminary, so I wasn't a voting member.
No.
But we were just.
But you got to be there. You were in the room where it happens.
I was in the room.
The room where it happens.
Yeah. Until we went to explore the castle instead of sit in the.
Yeah, see, that's the problem.
The one day when we were like, let's skip this.
I would probably find myself doing that a lot. That's that's the problem with a lot of these assemblies that I've been invited to. I find myself often being like, do I want to go to another plenary session? Or do I want to go, explore this beautiful place that I find myself in? I'm not going to sit
in the
conference
room.
Have
you gone to the youth gathering?
Yeah.
We should go to the youth, or you've been to the youth gathering, but the leader one, the extravaganza.
No, I've never been to the youth extravaganza.
I went to that one a few years ago, and it was in Anaheim, right by Disneyland.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we were like, it's January. I want to be outside. Why am I sitting in a conference room?
I don't
want to
be sitting in this ballroom or this conference room. I would like to be. In Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
Or wherever. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's the business of the
ELCA.
Church. That's your ELCA update. ELCA update. We should have a little sounder.
We don't know what we're talking about. That's what.
No, not really. We're not.
We are not
clearly
qualified enough to give an ELCA update.
You and I didn't go.
Yeah.
But I can tell you some things that I heard. It might be secondhand and thus a little bit incorrect, but oh well. So, yeah, let's get to the gospel.
Oh, you don't
want to
talk about what shows you're watching?
Still watching 90 Day Fiancé and a little bit of Bachelor in Paradise. But I haven't watched this week's Bachelor in Paradise.
It's kind of.
You told me it was boring.
I mean, it's getting to like, it doesn't.
Yeah.
They've
gonna be
boxed
exciting,
themselves
I think,
in
the end. Yeah.
That they're only choosing people from the Bachelor franchise.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
There's all these other shows now that are bringing people in from different shows
and that's
and from
exciting
different things
because you can
different
pick
influencers
very
right
dynamic people whereas Bachelor I just feel like week after week in Bachelor in Paradise it's somebody coming up the beach and everybody's like that's Josh and I'm like who's Josh I don't remember this lame dude I don't care about him he lives in Austin, Texas wow exciting
wow.
Oh he's in tech cool
yeah
cool Josh gosh miss me with all that so I have not caught up but I know it's gonna get exciting because they're doing something
they're gonna
weird
turn it into a like Survivor
it's gonna be
challenge.
Survivor
yeah.
It's gonna be Survivor but Bachelor in Paradise which is like I don't think exactly the spirit of the show if you're trying to find and
love?
Help two people fall in love it's not really about like let's win this challenge so I can get $1 million
some people's love is about that okay
and some people's love is about who has the biggest bank account but so you told me it was boring, and I've also kind of felt like, it's a little slow. It needs to pick up, and I think it will. So I've been dragging my feet on watching that. So instead, we're watching...
The Summer I Turned Pretty.
No.
Oh.
I know. No, it's a show that is probably like 10 years old at this point, but we're trying to catch up 90 Day Fiancé.
Yep.
But it's so interesting, and we're like 2 episodes away from the end, so now everything's picking up.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just fascinating. This show is just so fascinating. These people who are like...
Oh, funny.
They should not be together, but they always end up getting together. And I'm like, do not marry this person. They are so toxic. Like, I don't know how this is going to work. And they always end up getting married.
May that love
I'm like, oh my God.
Never find me.
I know. Oh my gosh. So
that's my prayer.
You've been watching The Summer
I
Turned Pretty.
Been watching
it
this,
sounds like.
Did you listen or did you learn any more about that since I tried to explain
no
it to you? Okay. The Summer I Turned Pretty is about these teenagers who go to their beach house in, you know, upstate, wherever, East Coast,
somewhere
every summer.
New England.
And one of the girls is like love triangle with the two brothers, right? She's not a sister. She's a separate family.
Always messy.
Yes. But in love with both these brothers. Mm-hmm. And so season one was this introduction of like, oh my gosh, she loves Conrad. And the fact that these, that us 30-year-old mm-hmm. women are watching this show is hilarious.
Yeah, it's great.
And
it's great.
It's just mm-hmm. a little nostalgia, maybe.
It's good.
And
yeah.
then season two, it's like, oh, she loves Jeremiah.
Oh, no.
And now
not
season
Jeremiah.
Season three, she's engaged to Jeremiah. But we're like, this has to turn around. This has to, like,
you would think.
This is, it's based on books. So I have read
the
books.
I was about
books.
To say, is this a book?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's very, like, Taylor Swift coded. Like, a lot of music is Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
I've heard that the majority of the audience is millennials. not teenagers watching
not teenagers?
This.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. But, well, now, and in season three, now we're like, they're just graduating college. So now they're like 22, which
yeah.
is a little more acceptable age to get married, but
yeah,
still
it's like, wow.
one of my friends, so I have a group of friends who watches it mm-hmm. every Wednesday, and one of my friends is like, they're so young, I can't believe they're doing it. She's like, wait, I got married at 22.
It's like,
wait, I got married right out of college. Never mind. Mm. This is me.
Isn't that funny how that happens?
Yeah.
And you look around and you're like, there's no way it's like that person is driving or something. It's like, yeah, time goes
yeah,
on.
Look at that.
And you
we
just
also
view
drove
yourself.
At 16.
Yeah, I guess
yeah.
so. But it feels so. Like no way. That's crazy.
Okay. That's all I wanted to bring up is that
okay.
I'm watching that.
Well,
I also watched
I'll
the first season of the Buccaneers, which is good.
Buccaneers.
Buccaneers was kind of fun.
Pirate show?
No.
Our,
Bridgerton with
oh,
the dresses and the
yeah.
like the like come what are,
yeah.
I can't even use words. Kay. That kind of era, but it's
right.
these New York girls who go to London
oh.
to have their little like matchmaker diamond of the season kind
gotcha.
Of a thing. And then another girl finds herself in a love triangle.
Wow.
With a
so many love
Duke
triangles. Oh.
And his best Duke. Friend.
Oh, and they were roommates.
I can't get away from love.
Wow.
And they were roommates.
Well, that's, it's always.
And her sister was a witch.
And her sister was a witch, bro. Yeah, that's,
love
I mean.
Triangles.
That's, it's
the
very
shows
interesting.
I'm watching, apparently.
It's very, so what is Buccaneers? Is that on Netflix or something?
I watched it on Amazon Prime, but I think it's Apple TV.
Buccaneers. Why is it called Buccaneers?
Not sure.
Hmm.
It's
like pirates?
It's like a lot of modern music.
Anybody got a peg leg on that show?
No, hmm. not yet.
No hook
I'm
hands.
Only through the first season, though.
All right. Well.
So there we go.
I might
There's
have
my
to.
TV update.
Okay. TV update. It's updated.
Updated.
Shall we turn the page?
Yeah, sorry. We
to talk about the text.
Yeah. I'm just avoiding talking about money. Maybe
I
that's
know.
The
it's the parable
no,
of the rich fool.
You did a great job. I think
Thank
there
you.
Was a lot of spinning things.
Yeah.
To look at it a different angle. And,
yeah.
And
because this.
Instead of like, give us money here at church.
Yeah. Because
that
that's what it
the
turns
sermon.
Into.
Right.
Of like, how do you be generous toward God? It's like, well.
Well.
You
right
should be
here.
Tithing. Yeah,
yeah.
Let's talk about tithing. Let's
right.
talk about giving more to the
which,
church. And
which
it's
is
like,
always uncomfortable. Right.
It's always
like,
uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable to sit and listen to it.
It's
you ever go to a new church? Of yeah. course, that's their topic.
Yeah.
Of
you happen to walk in on
yeah.
the One Stewardship Sunday. It's uncomfortable, I will say, as the person preaching on it. It's
right.
no fun to like have
right.
a sermon about like, come on, people, let's up our giving. But it's
yeah,
it's part of the business of the church. You got to do it sometimes. But I didn't want that to be what this Sunday was about because
no.
it's not a stewardship Sunday. But it's also not about like money is evil and bad.
Right.
That's also
right.
something I wanted to be sensitive about because it's like it's not. That money is inherently evil. It's
that it, when money is for me.
Yeah. Or money is the only thing you trust or money is,
yeah.
it's controlling your life. That's when it can twist,
mm-hmm.
twist your morals and your values into
yep.
a life that is empty.
You had some good sound bites in this. And, mm. and one of these you said was you don't have to be wealthy to be in bondage to money.
Yeah, because and, that was another thing is
yeah.
I was like, when I preach these sermons, and I've preached sermons like this several times where you're talking about, you know, the rich man and, you know, the camel and the eye of the
oh,
needle
yeah.
thing,
yep.
you know, there's one that you talk about the rich man, the wealthy man, and then this one also the rich, you know, fool. And it's like all these things about rich, rich, rich. It's easy to sit in the pews and go, well, these texts about rich people, I'm not rich, so
right. Someone's it's talking than about somebody that
there's yeah. always a bigger fish, yeah. so you can always yeah. pass it off of, well, I'm not the wealthiest person in mm-hmm. the world. But it's like, it's not, these passages are not about the wealthiest person. It's just a person who is, yes, in bondage to a love of money.
Yes. Yep.
And that's what
makes. Money, more problems.
More money, more problems. And because the line is, it's not that money is the root of all evil. It's the love of money is the root of all
yeah,
evil.
I right,
was talking to Lisa
right.
Sauer about this after church, too. We often forget that how that phrase begins.
Right.
It's the love of money is the root of all evil. It's not money itself, because money itself is just paper. You can use it as a tool to do great
yes.
things
yeah.
in this world.
Yeah.
But if you turn it into an object to devote your life to, then that's when it becomes the root of all evil. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it was very focused on the like me, I, what, you know,
yeah.
mine.
Yeah. Me, myself, and mine is the name of
yeah.
the sermon, because yeah, this is a very interesting, and I said this in my sermon, but this is a very interesting parable because we get to hear an inner dialogue or an inner
right.
monologue.
Yep.
We don't get inner monologue very much in the Bible. But in this parable, we hear the rich fool say, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and I'll build mm-hmm. larger ones. And there I'll store all of my grains and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. So we get this very unique viewpoint.
Well, and I think that's so funny, too, because that's such an inner monologue. Like, no
yeah.
one's saying that out loud.
I'll say, here's what I'll
soul.
Do. Here, soul, I'll say to myself. But that's in the Bible a lot. The, you know, I say to my soul, you know,
yep.
bless the Lord, oh my soul. You mm-hmm. know, there's all this, like, you talk to your own spirit.
But we do that all the time. We just don't,
yeah,
like,
we just don't
say
label
that we
it
do it, right?
As that. Yeah, or, yeah.
What?
Or we just don't talk about it because it
or,
sounds like you're a crazy person.
Well, yeah. Or, you know, I don't know, journaling or manifesting or something. This
right.
is like, this is that's, like, okay, here's all my goals. And
yeah.
once I reach these, then I'll.
Then I shall be happy.
Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. Right.
And that
like,
wasn't an angle I went with, but I've preached on this
right.
before. And that was an angle I took of like,
yep. Yep.
you know, that whole, like, if I reach this threshold, you know, like you said, if I have this vision board and it's like, if I do this, this, and this, then I'll be good.
Yep.
And it's like,
yep.
I hate to break it to you, but that will never happen.
Right.
The richest person in the world buys a new super yacht and immediately goes, I need a bigger one. Like
yep.
everybody
yep.
does that. It doesn't
yep.
matter how much money you have. You'll always go, I need more. I
mm-hmm.
need more. And then it's like you it's a threshold that you'll never actually cross.
Right.
There's never actually, like, I would argue that this in this parable, you know, him saying, once I store up enough, then I'll say to my soul, relax,
yeah.
eat, drink, and be merry. And I think if we could expound this parable, it's like
we'd never reach
next
that point.
Season,
yeah.
yeah, he would go, well, I'll tear down that big barn and
build another one.
It's
one.
Like there's
right.
always going to be, well, then I can relax. Then I can. It's like you'll never get there. That's the human condition.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We'll always want just a little bit more. And there's
well,
where it turns toxic. And that's where it turns evil, is because it's you just keep going. I need more. It's never enough. Bigger house, better car, you know, whatever I need.
Yeah.
Or even for like our careers, you know, how many people are going, I need that next thing, I need that next threshold, and then I'll be happy. Scottie Scheffler, the is
mm-hmm.
arguably the best golfer in the world, he's one away from a career grand slam. I think he needs
yeah.
to win the U.S. Open, and he was interviewed after winning the Open Championship, which is the British Open, but they just call it the Open because they're selfish. They think only of themselves.
Anyway.
Just like this. Anyway, he was interviewed after winning the Open, and it went viral because he's like, this is not the most important thing in my life. And he's like, my
yeah.
family's most important
yeah.
in my life. Because he goes, if this is where I tied up all my self-worth, it's like, I win a championship, cool, I feel happy for 2 minutes, and then I'm immediately back on the,
yeah.
but I need the next thing,
yeah.
but I need, and he's like, it's an endless cycle, and he's like, it's never fulfilling. This is an incredibly unfulfilling life, chasing after championships. And he's like, I don't like this very much. And it was so,
to which
people
don't
are,
you kind of look at him? Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I want to push back on that a little
yeah,
bit.
Because
like,
he keeps doing it. But the person who spoke up against it was Tom Brady. Tom Brady wrote an open letter and he was like, when you win championships, you're showing your family what greatness looks like. And actually,
you should never have responded.
And the argument is, where's your family, Tom? Because broken up. So it's like, where did that get you? Scotty's point was like, this is not where I tie up all my self-worth in like the next big championship, whatever. And that's kind of the, I think what he's getting to is that human condition of like, are you ever satisfied? You'll think, okay, then I'll win the Masters one more time and I'll be happy. I guarantee you, you get that green jacket on and you'll go one more and then I'll be tied for Tiger's record and then I'll be enough. It's like, and the next year you go, I need the next one.
There's part of me though that's like, these professional athletes though too, like there's so much privilege wrapped up in your job then to be like, it's not that great. There's like, there's a weird, like,
you play golf and get paid millions of dollars for it.
Like,
don't tell me you're so tortured.
Right. I think that's my, like, okay, you don't have to put all of your worth in that, but I think there is a moment to be like, I worked hard for this.
Yeah.
I've gotten to this point. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have gotten me to this point in my trainers and whatever. And like, I'm going to revel in it for a second.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe the, like, isn't that the moment to eat, drink, and be merry?
Yeah. But I think Scotty's thing was like, I never do. I never get to that point because I'm always mentally I'm like on to the next one. I don't know. It sounds like Scotty went to therapy.
I think
he's working.
No, I
want to
therapize him. This is me therapizing him right now.
Okay.
But that's what I'm saying. Shouldn't there be a moment in that mountaintop experience to eat, drink, and be merry? Isn't that the point of this?
Yeah.
That like
find some satisfaction.
Maybe I'm twisting this a different way than you're trying to take it. But like, yeah, can't we? Instead of always trying to go up the hill, can't we pause for a second, say, sweet, eat, drink, be merry?
Right.
Like, I don't really care what happens after that, I guess. But like,
I don't know.
If God wants good things for us, shouldn't we have moments of that also? And I don't like the, I don't know, maybe I'm uncomfortable with Scottie Scheffler being like, whatever. Like,
because that was very much his attitude.
Yeah.
Like, who cares about any of this stuff? And that's why a lot of people were offended by it, because it's like you're in front of this press corps and like you're doing all this and you're essentially telling them like none of this matters to me. It's like, well, that's easy for you to say because you keep winning these things.
Right.
You
that
know
too.
How much
it sounds kind of arrogant to me. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
anyway.
I know you're trying to use it as a good example and I don't know.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Like, you're ruining my good example.
It wasn't a great example.
No, it wasn't great. But. Which is why it wasn't. This is the podcast to talk about stuff that didn't make the sermon. Okay?
But this is the
cut it for a reason.
But this is the tough stuff of talking about money, though. Too
right.
Is
there's
how
so many pitfalls
we,
in it?
How do we find like a zen point of money?
Yeah.
Like where there has to be some kind of scientific equation where it's like to have this amount of money
to
be comfortable. And happy, but not too much that it gives you more problems, right? Like that, there has to be a middle ground of that somewhere.
Because
if you don't have enough money and you can't pay your bills, well, that's, you know.
Okay, so they did, and it's funny you said that. There is a 2010 study, and I can't see here who did it.
Okay.
Matthew Killingsworth and Daniel Callahan and... Angus Deaton.
Anyway.
I'm not sure. Anyway, some organization did it.
Okay.
And they found that happiness plateaus at
$75,000. Oof. I think we need to take account of inflation right now.
So this was 15 years ago. But happiness has a plateau. Because, at a certain point, you're just chasing after what? I don't know. But it's like, yes, there is a place where the marginal returns are, it doesn't, anything over that, you're just as miserable as everybody else. You're just, like, miserable in a bigger house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But money doesn't buy happiness. Sure. No. But it buys a lot of things that
lead to
happiness.
It buys a lot of nice stuff,
It
buys freedom and freedom from worry and all that stuff. So, I think...
Well, it buys your basic needs, though, too.
Yeah,
like
for sure. And apparently that study says that $75,000 can buy your basic needs and some creature comforts.
I don't know what world they're living in or what
city.
I
don't know. Yeah, it depends.
But, or even like, I'm thinking about how expensive like therapy is.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, couldn't everybody use some of that?
Yeah, and yeah,
but not everybody can afford it.
But
that's
not
a luxury
everybody
too.
Can afford it. So like
that's a privilege to be able to afford therapy.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just trying to pull this apart.
I don't know.
For pulling it apart's sake. But
I think, and we don't know because the parable ends here, but like if
so that we just like never get enough.
No. If we could ask Jesus, like, okay, then what should the rich fool have done to be not foolish? Because grain, like crops, all this stuff,
yeah,
it's gonna go bad, so it needs to be stored or taken to market, but apparently there's a certain amount that he's like, I'll just save this up for later because then I can use it later. So what was he supposed to do? I imagine Jesus's answer was probably something along the lines of, you should have taken your abundance,
mm-hmm,
and gone to the community and said, you know, what farmers among us didn't have a great year?
Right.
You know, this
right
farmer's field was flooded for half,
yeah,
the spring, so he couldn't get his barley in time, so his didn't grow. Or this one,
yeah,
had some sort of blight, and that
dare
one went,
we?
Yeah, exactly. So scary. But like, I think the answer would have been, the abundance should have been shared. And
right
then in the sharing with your neighbors, the rich fool would have realized that is a place where your soul will be happy, because you'll look around at the joy in,
yes,
the world that you've created and go, we can all now eat, drink, and be merry because Farmer Brown down the street isn't,
yeah,
counting his pennies because his fields failed, and this farmer up the street has so much that, you know, he doesn't know what to do with it. It's coming out of his ears. It's like if they got together, they could both benefit.
Well, and maybe those aside farmers have something else to bring to the table too. Like,
yeah,
maybe
sure
this,
mm-hmm,
is the eat, drink, and be merry in a relational way instead of, and not to ask them
right
for it, not like a trade, but as a like,
yeah,
as like, this is how community,
yes,
works,
and that's
that we all
of
have different gifts. And
that's the angle I went at in the sermon,
yes,
is,
yeah,
you can use your abundances, whether that's money or resources,
right,
or
right
talents or whatever, to when you reach and share it with,
yeah,
your community, you're building up this interconnectedness where now we're closer together as a people. You know your,
yes,
neighbors better.
Yes.
You know their needs better.
Yeah.
And now we're all in this happy world together that we've created. And isn't this what our soul really longs for?
Right.
Our soul
right
does not long,
yeah,
for bigger barns. We don't need bigger barns. We need longer tables, as people say.
Oh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
We don't need higher walls. We need longer tables. But it is true. There's something about that. So that's really the angle I took, is not like, you know, you never see a U-Haul behind a hearse, you know, because that is a sermon, and I've,
yeah,
given that sermon before.
Yeah, that's one too.
Like, what are you going to do with your stuff when you're gone? Like, you should share it now or whatever. But I think it's more I focused more of my attention on the interconnected piece, the community,
mm-hmm,
aspect of it. And this rich fool was foolish,
mm-hmm,
because he isolated himself and said, what do I need for me and my life and my,
yeah,
whatever? And,
yeah,
he took no time to go, what do you need? And what do they need?
Yeah.
And what do we need? There was no we. There
right
was no they.
Right.
There was no you. It was all I, me, me, me. So that's kind of the tact I took on this.
Well, and so when we read this too, we're like, yeah, this is for someone to come and say, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me. Like, this is fair. This is,
mm-hmm,
just. This is like what should be happening, whatever.
Right.
And for Jesus to have that response of like,
greed.
No.
Yeah, it's like,
greed.
What are you talking about,
like,
greed? I'm just asking
greed
for you to share it.
Yeah.
And like the background, and I didn't talk about this either because there's a time constraint on it, but in the ancient world, the older brother got all the inheritance.
Yeah.
There was no like, well, you divide it up. How many children do you have? You go, oh, you got five children. Okay, take your whatever 20%. Net worth you have, and you just divide it all up. No, in the ancient world, it was the oldest sibling,
yeah,
or it's the ancient world. The oldest
boy.
Male boy got 100% of
to
everything.
Be males, they're just boys.
Yes, and if they're doing it right, they would, with that inheritance that they got, naturally say, I'm going to support my siblings.
Well,
but
that was kind
no
of their responsibility,
that was
too.
Your,
it was a, like, okay, you get
boy
all the money,
yeah,
but you're also now the like head of the
you
household.
You are the patriarch, so
yeah,
now you need to care for everybody.
Right.
And that's how it worked, because it was just easier. There was no math to be done. It was
right
just hand it
right
to the oldest boy, and that's good. So yeah, what is greedy about this? The brother saying, "Hey, Jesus, go over here and chastise him and tell him to give me my fair share." Yeah. That's not greed. That's just fairness. But we are looking at it with 2025 eyes. Yeah. Not.
But it's also Jesus being like, "I'm not the judge or arbitrator over you."
Yeah,
like
I love
Jesus
that.
Being like, "This is not my."
It's another
job.
Week.
Like, who do you think I am?
I preached on Mary and Martha a couple weeks ago, and that was another circumstance of Jesus being like, please don't triangulate this relationship.
Right.
I do not need to get involved. And like, as somebody who's a leader in the church, as the amount of times the people come to our office and go like, you need to talk with this person because I have a problem with them. It's like, triangulation is very toxic. I'm not the judge or arbiter of this situation. You need to go speak to that person directly.
Well,
don't
and you did
gossip
that very
about them.
Early. There was a like someone asked you to talk to me about something.
Yeah.
And you were like, you talk
please,
to her.
Please go
like,
talk to Pastor Dana about it. Don't tell me to go talk to Pastor Dana about
no.
it. Because then
right.
in that situation, they would want me to come to you and go, people have been talking. And suddenly it sounds like, ooh, the whole world is against you.
Yeah.
That makes you feel terrible. The person who was potentially harmed or felt like they had a need to be addressed, they had no way of face-to-face confronting you about what they wanted to talk. So like both sides feel bad in situations like that. So here's another example of Jesus being a very good leader and saying, I'm not going to triangulate this issue. You go talk to the person directly.
Right.
But then the caveat of don't be greedy. It's like greedy.
What do you think it means? This is what kind of got me in here. Mm-hmm. What do you think God said to him, you fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting.
Demanded of you.
I've always heard it as your life is being you're giving up your life. This very night you're going to die.
Oh, and that's what that means.
And
okay.
The things you have prepared, whose will they be? Because that's the you never see
you're
a U-Haul
die.
Behind a
okay.
hearse. Like, bury me with my money. These people who just have extraordinary amounts of wealth and seemingly no family because they've been cut off and no friends or whatever. It's
if
like,
you,
who
if
is
you're,
this for?
If
who's
you're
this
in that position
to?
And you need a will written for you, I would contact who we had on the podcast last
week. That's right.
My dad, Scott Becker.
Scott
write
Becker
your will.
Esquire.
Yeah,
he will help you with your will writing. And if you want to throw me or Pastor Dana in there, we'll take a little cut.
Okay. That just...
Anyway, but... I've always heard that as your life is being demanded of you, meaning your life
is on the line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The Grim Reaper is coming and taking your, he's going to take your life from
I don't
you.
Know.
It's being demanded of you.
I couldn't get my head around that.
You could
of like,
read it as more of an analogy of like your life is being demanded. Like you need to change your life.
That's what
something is being
change your life or like you need to wake up.
A new life.
More like,
is being demanded of you. Some sort of new way of waking up and living in the world in a new way. That's being demanded of you. Could be. I don't think that was the original intent of that line because of the next line. But that doesn't mean we couldn't use it as an example like that. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. For some reason, that was catching me today. But
it's a tough one. Talking about money is always hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Did you have any other notes?
I was thinking about, I've seen some TikToks, people being like, I don't know who traumatized you, but you don't need to Venmo me back for your $3 coffee. Like things like
true.
That. Like and how we like are so fair sometimes that it just is like
it's a good point.
It's not that big of a deal. Like I think there's things worth splitting or like amounts that are like, we need to divide that up fairly, but
a big purchase,
I think those are just really funny of
if you're going on like a friend's trip or something and you're buying everybody's plane ticket, like by all means be like, please reimburse me for that. Cause that's a large sum of money. But like you said, if you're going out to coffee with a friend and you're like, I'll pay, or you know, you get some beers with some buddies and you're like, I'll pay for these.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't need to Venmo me for that because going
like,
back to the community thing, it's like, if we're living in this community together, then naturally you get this one.
Yeah.
I'll get the next one. You get that. We have this life together where it's like can't keep track of every dime, or else this creates this toxic environment where it's like you know, I paid for her coffee last week, but
and she never paid
and
me
she never
back.
Paid me for the beers, and beers are a lot more expensive than coffees. And now I'm she it's like, why are we nickel and diming such?
Instead, it creates an environment, I think, of like, now we have to do it another time,
yeah,
for it to be your turn or whatever.
And
like I don't know,
yeah,
like
you're
this, like, hey,
there's
we,
a reciprocity to it of like,
and there's a continuation.
I owe you next time,
right.
Meaning next time is going to happen in the next couple of weeks, or else we'll forget, and that's a good thing.
Which has also happened to me, I feel like, too. Where, like, I've paid for stuff and been like, okay, next time's your turn. And then, we never do a next time. whatever.
And then
life happens and whatever. And you're like, well, whatever. Like, what am I going to be like? Oh, my gosh, I'm out $15.
Right.
Dang it.
But you were open-handed, and therefore you created these spaces where it's so great. Where, like, you could have a future relationship.
But, yeah, I think those TikToks have been kind of funny of people being like.
I don't know who traumatized you. Yeah. True. I don't know. So yeah, this is very much about how to be open-hearted with what you've been entrusted with, not
how to turn yourself outward instead of inward,
and not everything being me and me and me.
Yeah.
And it's not about building bigger ballrooms. I mean barns, and slapping gold on everything. And you know, it's how can you share what you have with those in need. And
not expecting something in return.
Not expecting anything in return. Not keeping a ledger of rights and wrongs.
Yeah.
It's being wise would be, you know, how can you be rich towards God, to use the words from the gospel. To be rich toward God would mean to be open-hearted and open-handed with your community and the people around you.
Yeah.
So you can become better interconnected as a community. You can rely on each other.
How have we distorted this so much?
I don't
know. I guess I just...
I don't know.
We have all these people in this country claiming to be Christians, and we have so many... Jesus talks about money all the time, and we have distorted all of this into...
Right.
I need all the money I can get ever for
me.
We
will trot out
and
several places in scriptures that can make certain demographics feel demonized.
Yep.
But anything regarding money... And Jesus is very open and honest about money and the use of our possessions and where we put our trust and our hope and our future and whatever. Very clearly saying money, if it's something you're using as, you know, to root your life and your trust and your hope and you have this love of money and your possessions and your things, then you are a fool and you are lost.
Like,
but
very
we'll just go,
clearly.
Nah. No, let's not talk about that.
Very clearly.
Yeah, there's no mincing words.
No.
There's lots of passages that people use to demonize other groups of people in this country. And it's like, boy, that's a gray area, and you're pulling from a really obscure place in the text, and you're not reading it in the context it was intended. But these passages...
Be careful of people who want to, like, read the Bible literally, because that...
Yeah,
anybody, we're a Bible church or things like that. Like, that just, it's not
almost
a sting.
Almost anybody who says, the Bible says blank and it's a black and white picture.
It's not.
Yeah, beware, because they're trying to get something from you. They're trying to manipulate you in some way. The Bible is not univocal about almost anything.
You could
pull a random text from anywhere and get it to
and
say something
it,
you want it to say. You can use the Bible, and people did. In the civil rights era,
people do
to say that, look at this, look what the Bible says about slavery. It's actually in favor of it.
Slavery
in a lot
was
of ways.
All over the Bible.
Yeah, chattel slavery was a known, agreed upon thing. There are rules in the Bible of how you are to treat your slave.
Yes.
So you can pull lots of stuff from the Bible to say this is okay. The Bible says it.
Or this isn't okay because the Bible says it.
Because the Bible says it, but we read contextually and we read with our hearts open, and we rely on the Holy Spirit to guide us and has brought us to this age.
And we use context to interpret context also.
Absolutely.
Of how Jesus has consistently talked about faith
and money and all these things.
And this
is
one
of those that I can hear clearly what the voice of Jesus is telling us to do with our money and our resources. But it's blinded us in a lot of ways. And there are a lot of traps.
Yep. So
that's why this text can be very difficult sometimes.
Well, Anyway, we need a new basketball hoop here at the church. So if anyone wants to donate that.
Anybody who drove by the church may have noticed that our basketball hoop was laying down in the parking lot. We had a derecho come by. How about that? That was kind of cool. Or maybe it wasn't technically a derecho.
I don't think it was technically, but people like to say it.
I had to Google what a derecho was because it's. I didn't know what that was. It's just straight line wind.
Yeah,
but like a wall of straight line wind. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's what derecho means, straight. So it's like a straight line.
Derecho means right, but yeah, straight.
Derecho means right. All right, I don't know. But it's right wind, straight wind. I don't
so straight wind.
Straight,
yeah,
right uh-huh. wind. Anyway, it's going at a right angle. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, maybe that.
Who knows? It's anyway. A lot of wind, and we had a lot of wind. It was maybe short of a derecho, but it apparently hit the basketball hoop right on and knocked the basketball hoop over. A lot of people in town here in Norwood lost their power for a few days because there were a lot of old trees that went down.
Yep.
If you're still struggling with getting your power back up or damage from that storm, we are praying for you. If you need any resources,
if you need
we're
any
here.
Help, we
we're here.
Let us know.
Yeah, we're here. The church, we never lost power here, so. We had a few people come to church after the storm and saying, can I come here and charge my devices?
Oh, yeah.
Like, absolutely. Plug in all we got.
Use
empty
our
power
electricity.
Out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely do that. So, I think that's all we got. The iPad is saying we're almost out of battery. So,
yep, we're about to die.
We're about to die.
Our life is being demanded of us.
at this hour, the life of the iPad is being demanded of it.
Yes.
And whose podcast will this be? Yours. So thank you for listening. I'm the king of the transition.
Okay.
If you had any thoughts, ideas to continue this conversation, we'd love to have it with you.
Let us know.
Reach out to us, come to church, call us, email us. We'd love to hear from you. So
have
thank
coffee
you
with
us.
I've been having coffee with a lot of people.
Yeah, Pastor Dana's been all over town doing coffee and happy hours. Well, not as many happy hours as you wish.
Hey, let's just say this plainly. It is okay to drink with your pastor.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. In fact, could you imagine?
Encouraged.
Yeah. The conversation. It's flowing imagine? Freely with the pastor. But if you want to come have coffee with us, we'd love it. So thank you for listening. We will talk to you next time.
Yep.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.